So picture this. You're standing waist deep in just murky, freezing water inside a flooded, pitch-black 1920s sanatorium.
Oh, that sounds awful already.
Right. And you have exactly two bullets left in this heavy .38 police revolver.
Just two.
Just two. And you can hear something massive sloshing through the water right behind you.
Yeah, that's pure nightmare fuel.
Exactly. So you try to line up a shot on its like bioluminescent weak point, but you can't.
Because your hands are shaking?
Yes, you
Yeah.
physically cannot line up the shot because your character is so fundamentally terrified by what they're looking at, their hands are violently shaking. And the controller in your actual hands is bucking against your grip.
Right, the haptics.
Yeah, so if you don't take a sedative in the next 3 seconds to steady your own nerves, you are going to die.
Which is just, I mean, that is the exact moment where a game stops being a piece of software and becomes a genuine psychological stress test.
I completely agree. And that is exactly the kind of uncompromising survival horror we are exploring today. We are pulling our insights from a really comprehensive, highly detailed technical review published by Tekken Game on August 19th, 2026.
Right, regarding the highly anticipated release of The Sinking City 2.
Yep, by the Ukrainian developer Frogwares. And the mission for our deep dive today is to explore a transformation, really. We're looking at how an independent studio took their mixed-reviewed open-world detective game from 2019, completely tore it down to the studs, and just re-engineered it into this terrifying Unreal Engine 5-powered masterpiece.
A masterpiece that just earned an 8.5 out of 10 from Tekken, by the way.
And secured a 79 Metascore.
Okay.
Let's unpack this, because to call this a sequel feels, I don't know, almost misleading.
It is misleading. I mean, calling it a sequel implies iteration, you know, like taking what you did before and just adding a fresh coat of paint or maybe a few new mechanics.
Like Assassin's Creed 2 or something.
Yeah, exactly. But this is a dramatic, fundamental, structural pivot. Frogwares looked critically at their 2019 original, which relied very heavily on these verbose branching dialogue
Oh,
trees,
yeah, lots of talking.
tons of talking, and a massive sprawling open city grid. And they realized that structure was actively working against their goal. I mean, open worlds give players freedom, and freedom is the enemy of horror.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
So they just abandoned it. They pivoted to pure cosmic dread, perfectly capturing the H.P. Lovecraft mythos in a 1920s flooded version of Arkham, Massachusetts.
Which is huge. And I want to establish a crucial detail for you right up front. If you're listening, you do not need to have played that 2019 original to step into this one.
No, not at all.
There is total narrative independence here. The game simply drops you into this submerged graveyard of a city, immediately surrounding you with fanatical occultists and oceanic mutations. It's just a clean slate of absolute nightmare fuel.
Which is such a smart design choice, honestly. They removed the lore barrier entirely.
Right, no homework required.
Exactly. You don't have to watch a 20-minute recap video to understand why you're being chased by an eldritch abomination. You just know you need to run.
It makes me think of the difference between like an endless all-you-can-eat buffet and a meticulously crafted five-course meal.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Because the 2019 game was the buffet. You had this massive open city, abundant ammunition, and this legacy Unreal Engine 4 pipeline that let you run wherever you wanted.
But you were never really satisfied.
No, you weren't. And the threat level felt incredibly shallow. So with the 2026 sequel, they just took the buffet away. They locked you in a room. They pivoted to these dense, semi-open Metroidvania-style hubs.
What's fascinating here is the psychology behind that restriction. In most games, the progression arc is about becoming more powerful,
Yeah,
right?
you start weak, you level up, you become a superhero.
Exactly. But Frogwares went the exact opposite direction. By shifting to those Metroidvania hubs, they created strict boundaries and brutal ammunition scarcity. They realized that taking power away from the player is how you engineer genuine fear. You aren't conquering Arkham. You are merely surviving its architecture.
And the tools you use to survive really reflect that desperation. The Tekken review goes deep into the visceral combat mechanics, and it's clear this is the furthest thing from a run-and-gun shooter.
Oh, totally. Everything feels grounded and heavy.
Yeah, your arsenal consists of vintage weapons that feel their age. You have your 1920s .38 police revolver, which is basically your primary tool for the humanoid mutants.
Right.
And you have a rusted double-barrel shotgun for those massive, fast-moving bosses when you desperately need emergency crowd control. And then when you are completely out of options, you have a heady fireman's axe.
But even the axe isn't a get-out-of-jail-free card.
No, it's not.
Swinging drains your stamina so rapidly that you can maybe get, what, two or three heavy swings in?
Pretty much.
And then your character is completely winded and defenseless. There's a profound physical weight to the mechanics.
Tekken actually highlights a quote from Alexander Radko, the lead gameplay designer, that I think captures this entire philosophy perfectly.
Hey, what's he say?
He said, "We wanted players to experience genuine vulnerability in the face of cosmic dread. Every single bullet must feel as precious as life itself in the ruins of Arkham."
That is, wow. That philosophy forces a complete behavioral shift in the player.
Definitely.
Because in a standard shooter, you enter a room and think, okay, how do I clear this? But in The Sinking City 2, you peek into a flooded corridor and think, do I even have the resources to survive walking down there?
Now, I do want to push back on one of the core systems Tekken mentions, just to represent the skeptic in you listening right now.
Okay, lay it on me.
The game hinges on this sanity meter. And historically, sanity meters in games can be incredibly tedious.
Yeah, they can.
They often devolve into a glorified babysitting mechanic, mm-hmm. right? Like a hunger bar in a generic survival game where you just have to eat an apple every 5 minutes to stop an annoying beeping sound.
Right, exactly.
So does this actually elevate the horror, or is it just busy work?
Well, it's a completely fair challenge because we've all played games where those meters are just arbitrary progress bars that kill the pacing.
Totally.
But this is where Frogwares shows their brilliance. The sanity system here alters the physical reality of the gameplay. When your character spends too much time in pitch black environments or witnesses an occult ritual or even reads forbidden texts, their mental stability degrades.
Right.
But instead of just lowering a bar, it triggers terrifying visual distortions and auditory hallucinations. And here is the kicker. It destroys your weapon aim.
See, this is the mechanic that absolutely blew my mind. We aren't just talking about a blurry screen here.
No, not at all. Your character's hands physically begin to shake. The crosshairs on your screen start drifting wildly.
Oh, man.
If you are cornered by a deep sea mutation and your sanity is low, you physically cannot steady your weapon enough to hit a vital spot. Your actual ability to play the game degrades in real time alongside the character's mind.
Which introduces this incredibly stressful tactical layer to your inventory. To fix the shaking, you have to engage with the on-the-fly crafting system.
Yes, the sedatives.
Right. You have to scavenge for herbal extracts and laudanum to craft sedative serums. You are literally forced to self-medicate just to steady your hands long enough to fire a clean shot.
It's so tense.
I love this because it creates a brutal opportunity cost. Like, do I use my limited backpack space to carry bandages to heal my physical wounds? Or do I carry sedatives to heal my mind so I can actually aim my gun?
You are constantly managing two separate health bars, one physical and one psychological, and neglecting either one is fatal. It forces a level of calculation that makes every single encounter exhausting in the best possible way.
Yeah, here's where it gets really interesting. The underlying technology making that exhaustion possible.
Oh, the Unreal Engine 5 stuff.
Exactly. The Tekken Review devotes a significant portion to the marvels achieved by this indie studio using modern Unreal Engine 5. Now, they throw around a lot of specs. Lumen global illumination, nanite virtualized geometry, full native PC support for upscaling tech like DLSS 4 and AMD FSR 3.1.
That's a lot of jargon.
It is. So let me decode that upscaling tech for a second because it's vital to the experience. DLSS 4 and FSR 3.1 are essentially AI wizardry. They allow the game to render at a slightly lower resolution, and then the AI intelligently upscales the image to crisp 4K.
Right.
What that does is free up your computer's hardware to handle insanely complex lighting and physics without turning your PC into a stuttering space heater.
And freeing up that hardware is what allows systems like Lumen to shine. Lumen isn't just a buzzword for pretty lighting. It's a dynamic global illumination system that calculates how light bounces in real time.
Right, it's not baked in.
Exactly. So in The Sinking City 2, picture navigating a flooded narrow street. The glow of a single flickering gas lantern doesn't just illuminate a circle on the ground. That light realistically bounces off the brick walls, refracts through the murky dynamic floodwaters, and casts highly accurate, terrifyingly long shadows of whatever is swimming beneath the surface.
Yes, the shadows are the worst part.
They really are. It builds an atmosphere that feels incredibly thick and oppressive.
And the geometry making up those brick walls is driven by nanite. For those who aren't developers, nanite is a system that allows creators to import film-quality, high-resolution assets into a game without crashing the frame rate.
It's a game changer.
It really is. It means when you walk past a decaying Victorian estate, You aren't looking at a flat texture painted to look like moss. You are looking at mathematically rendered three-dimensional moss on rotting wood. The microscopic detail on the grotesque wet skin of the mutants is so granular, you can practically smell the damp rot of the city.
The visual fidelity grounds the horror, but the technology extends beyond the screen. The integration of advanced 3D spatial acoustics, specifically supporting Dolby Atmos and the PlayStation 5 Tempest 3D engine, is crucial.
Oh, the audio is phenomenal.
Because horror is often about what you can't see, right? When you have high-fidelity spatial audio, you don't just hear a splash. You can pinpoint exactly where in the room that splash happened.
Yeah, you hear the water dripping from the ceiling above your left shoulder.
Exactly. You hear the wood groaning under a heavy footstep in the room directly beneath you.
Pigeon uses the word oppressive to describe the soundscape, which is perfect. And they physically connect you to that soundscape using the DualSense haptic feedback. This isn't just basic controller rumble.
No, it's so much more nuanced.
The triggers on the controller physically resist your fingers. If you're firing that heavy rusted shotgun, the trigger actually requires more force to pull. You can feel the simulated resistance of the water when your character wades through a flooded basement.
When you combine the heavy weighted gunplay with hands that are shaking from the sanity system, wrap the player in hyper-detailed ray trace lighting, and plunge them into 3D spatial audio, you create a profoundly isolating sensory experience. You feel completely cut off from safety.
Which makes the way you navigate this world even more daunting. Frogwares made a massive, risky design choice when it comes to level design. They completely removed intrusive HUD waypoints.
Completely.
Completely. There is no mini-map in the corner of your screen. There is no glowing, dotted line on the floor telling you where the next objective is.
That is a remarkably bold choice for a game released in 2026. The industry standard has heavily leaned into guiding the player effortlessly from point A to point B to avoid frustration.
Yeah, but frustration, or at least the fear of getting lost, is a core pillar of survival. To navigate these flooded sewer labyrinths and abandoned sanatoriums, you have to actually observe your environment.
Right, you have to pay attention.
You really do. You have to look for architectural clues, like following the direction of rusted pipes or tracking blood trails. You have to decipher cryptic journals and engage with intricate, logic-driven puzzles rooted in Lovecraftian astronomy. You're forced to be present in the world, not just chasing a digital marker.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of the survival horror genre, this decision explains the 79 Metacritic score. Well, it's brilliant strategic positioning. Think about the defining titans of this space recently. You have the Resident Evil 4 remake sitting at a massive 93 Metascore, which absolutely perfected high-tension dynamic action horror.
Right.
Then you have Alan Wake 2 with an 89 Metascore, which is an unrivaled masterpiece of shifting psychological realities and narrative pacing.
And those are massive games with hundreds of millions in budget. Frogwares couldn't compete with them on sheer explosive spectacle.
Exactly. So they didn't try. They didn't chase the action mechanics of Resident Evil or the cinematic trippiness of Alan Wake. Instead, Frogwares carved out their own distinct, uncompromising niche centered entirely on sanity management and flooded survival.
I love that.
They accepted that a 79 consensus means the game isn't for everyone. It's going to alienate players who want an easy, guided experience. But for the people who want deep, atmospheric dread, it is unparalleled. They established a cosmic identity of their own.
Surviving that flooded identity requires a lot of discipline, though. The Tekken Review Board actually laid out specific tactical advice for players. They didn't just review the game. They essentially wrote a survival manual.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. They created 5 golden rules for The Sinking City 2. And weaving through these really illustrates just how demanding the mechanics are. Take their first rule, for example, playing in a darkened room with high-fidelity 3D spatial headphones.
That sounds like basic horror advice, but here it's actually functional.
Exactly. That isn't just an atmospheric suggestion. It's a tactical requirement. Because there's no HUD to warn you of enemy proximity, your ears are your only early warning system.
Right.
If you play this on standard TV speakers while checking your phone, you are going to die to ambushes you never heard coming.
It demands your complete sensory attention, which ties perfectly into the discipline required for their second rule regarding combat. Tekken explicitly states, do not panic fire.
Which is so hard to do.
It really is. When an armored crustacean abomination bursts out of the water, the human instinct is to hold down the trigger and empty the revolver. But Tekken notes that aiming exclusively for the glowing, bioluminescent weak points on these creatures reduces your ammunition expenditure by up to 70%.
Let's put that 70% into perspective, because we already established how scarce ammo is.
Mm-hmm.
But here is the genius of how these systems interlock. Those bioluminescent weak points are small. Hitting them requires absolute precision.
Yeah.
But if the monster is charging you, your character's sanity meter is dropping rapidly.
Yeah.
As the sanity drops, the hands start shaking. So the very moment you need precision the most, the game physically takes it away from you.
It's so cruel.
It is. To get that 70% ammo savings, you have to have the presence of mind to inject a sedative, steady your hands, stand your ground, and hit a target the size of a teacup while a monster is inches from your face. It's brilliant.
It's the definition of pressure. And managing that pressure brings us to the inventory constraints. The third tactical necessity Tekken outlines is prioritizing backpack expansion upgrades early in the game.
Yeah, it sounds mundane.
It does, but inventory management is the hidden engine of all great survival horror. The grid space is a psychological battleground. Every slot matters.
Because of the opportunity cost. If you find a box of precious shotgun shells, but your backpack is full, you have to decide what to leave behind. Do I drop my healing items? Do I drop my crafting materials? That actually brings up Tekken's fourth rule, always keep a reserve.
A reserve of what?
Specifically, they advise keeping at least one Molotov cocktail, which you have to craft manually from industrial alcohol and cloth, and one sedative serum for sudden ambushes.
The Molotov isn't just for damage, though it's for crowd control in an environment that is actively working against you. The flooded corridors create natural bottlenecks.
Right.
If you are swarmed, throwing a Molotov creates a wall of fire on top of the water, forcing enemies to funnel through a specific path. You have to use the environment because your firearms simply aren't enough to handle a horde.
And finally, Tekken's last piece of advice is perhaps the most defining characteristic of the game you have to read.
Oh, the lore documents.
Yes, you must actively read the lore documents, the scattered letters, and the journals you find. Because there are no HUD markers, the game will not give you a pop-up notification when you find a safe combination.
No glowing text on the screen?
Nothing. If an occultist diary mentions hiding a weapon cache, you know, beneath the Weeping Angel in the Eastern Graveyard, you have to open your map, figure out where the Eastern Graveyard is, navigate there by landmarks, and physically look for a Weeping Angel statue.
The game treats you like an adult. It refuses to do the heavy lifting for you. It requires you to be an active participant in your own survival.
So what does this all mean? When we step back and look at the Tekken deep dive, the takeaway is an incredibly inspiring development story. Frogwares looked at a flawed 2019 title, recognized the bloat that was holding it back, and had the courage to strip away all the tedious procedural filler.
Yeah, they really did.
They utilized cutting-edge Unreal Engine 5 technology, not just to make the water look pretty, but to heighten the psychological isolation and fear. They built an uncompromising, visually stunning, cosmic horror experience that thoroughly earned its 8.5 excellent rating.
They delivered on their vision by trusting the player to handle the friction. And as we wrap up our analysis, there's a specific aspect of that friction that I find deeply provocative. It's something that lingers long after you put the controller down.
What's that?
The core brilliance of The Sinking City 2 lies in that complete removal of HUD waypoints combined with the unreliability of the protagonist's own sanity. The game actively makes you question what you are seeing, and it refuses to map the world for you.
Right.
This raises a fascinating question about our reality outside the game. Consider our modern real-world reliance on digital guidance. Every single day, we use digital maps on our phones to navigate our own cities. We have GPS in our cars telling us exactly which lane to be in.
Yeah, we'd be lost without it.
We have objective markers in our calendar apps dictating what to do and when to do it. We are completely tethered to our own real-world HUDs.
That's a good point.
So if all of those digital markers suddenly vanished tomorrow, if the grid went down and you were forced to navigate your daily life relying only on your own flawed, unguided senses without a screen telling you where you are, how quickly would your own personal sanity meter begin to deplete?
Wow, that is a genuinely unsettling thought to leave on. We will let you mull that one over. Until next time.